Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am sitting here staring at my lovely, charming, talented co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, stuck out there in no man's land in Little Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hey, Jim, do you know what today is?
Huh?
Do you know what today is?
Today is, yeah, it's
National
February.
Guitar Day.
I have two of them in the closet.
You need to get your guitars out and get them back, get strumming them again. It's National Guitar Day, yeah.
Before we get started tonight, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a treat. And right now.
Hi, I'm Jerry Christina, better known as the bookie and the producer of the Writer's Block radio show, LA Talk Radio, in my finest radio voice. I just want to say a few words about our magic man, our engineer, Ronan Rosner, a very special man. Every Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, he makes this show happen. Now, those of you that listen to this show probably aren't aware of how we reach you every Thursday. Well, I'll tell you, we live in Star, Idaho. Our co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Russ Avison, also a co-host, lives in Fillmore, California. And my radio husband and guest for tonight, Richard Polinelli, who is also a sit-in host, lives in Fruta, Colorado, if you can believe that. Ronan works his magic to bring you this show. So we want to thank him for making this show happen. Ronan, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And Ronan, have your water in your fridge, right? And really, we do mean it, Ronan. We miss you very, very much. And a big thank you to Sam Hassan, owner of LA Talk Radio. Thank you, Sam. So without further ado, Ronan, make your magic.
And we are back with just me and Bobby and Richard. So let's just go ahead and introduce our guest for tonight. His name is Richard Polinelli. He is an author. He's a publisher. He's a business partner. And he's my friend. So please welcome back to the Writer's Block and occasional co-host, Mr. Richard Polinelli.
Hey.
Yay.
We got all 10 members of the studio audience to stand up on that one. That's good. Thanks for having me back on. It's nice to be in the guest chair for a change.
Well, I'm sure. I would love to be in the guest chair occasionally. I'm never there. So you got a new book coming out, Galen's Way. It's not quite out yet. What's your release date on that one, Richard?
It's coming out on February 23rd. It's up on Amazon as an ebook for pre-order right now, and I'm hoping that a print, a paperback, and a hardcover edition will be up and available for sale on that day as well. But it's a little different set up to do the print editions than it is the ebooks. But by the end of this month, if whatever edition you want, you should be able to get.
Excellent. Now, I'll be honest, brutally frank. You be frank tonight. I'll be frank tomorrow. I did not finish the book. I have not been feeling all that great. And I've got a ton of other stuff I have to do as well. But from what I read, this book is almost like a science fiction Western.
Yeah, yeah.
Bobby and I were talking about that today.
The best way to look at it is, and I'll get into kind of how this came about, is it's Star Wars, but we're just not calling it Star Wars. And the reason why we go that way is that John C. Wright is the person, very award-winning author, very acclaimed. He went to see The Force Awakens when the latest Star Wars movie came out a few years back. And his reaction to it when he walked out of the theater was pretty much mine, which is, what the hell was that? So he's driving home with his family. It's a 1-hour drive, and he is railing on this movie. How they messed up this, they messed up that. So the kids, as kids do, they go, okay, Dad, how would you do it better? He proceeds to tell them, and you know from experience working with him on some of the short stories, quote unquote short stories that John writes, he had details, and his wife Jaji was jotting them down, and they get home, and he develops this StarQuest universe, and wanted to invite other authors into it, and I had this idea for space opera type story. And so Jaji sends me the note. Something is going to be 8 to 10 pages. The first file was 43 pages. It's like a college course going through this thing. But as I was reading it, I found the fourth age of his notes to be the area that I wanted to write in. And so, you know, I put the story together. I sent it in to him. You know, if you like it, great. We'll roll with it. If you don't like it, I can pull the StarQuest stuff out and proceed with it. Obviously, they liked it because when you look at the book, you see the StarQuest seal on it. And as the way things turned out, I actually beat John getting the book done. I got mine done before he got his. So this will be the first official StarQuest book that comes out. And there are... John's got three that are going to come out at the same time. There's another author who's joined in. He's kind of gotten into the seventh age. And we'll kind of, as we go into Galen's Way, we'll get into the ages and what they mean. But so we have all these authors that are going to be a part of it. It's really meant to be kind of in that realm of a Star Wars type space opera with, you know, these grand distances of time and space involved. And I'm looking forward to digging into it. I've already got the first 8 books that I'm going to write in it plotted out.
Wow.
So I'm going to be busy for a couple of years. Wow. A couple of standalone novels first, and then I'm going to do nothing but StarQuest for a couple of years.
Cool. Now, just one question I have, request. Just a second, Bobby. Just one request, Richard. When I call you, would you please answer your phone?
You know, the last week or two, I think February is trying to kill me, but it's been a little crazy around here, and I am hoping that things will settle back down again. So you should be able to reach me by phone.
Oh, okay.
I think we've got all the fires put out for now.
We'll see. We did. Okay. All right, Bobby, go for it.
Well, I had a question as I was reading. It's wonderful, by the way. It was a romp. It was a fast ride. It was engaging. The characters were engaging. Every man wants to be Galen. Every woman wants him. The scenes in the bar, you really just nailed it. And I, as you know, I'm not necessarily a sci-fi fan, but there's everything here. There's adventure. There's romance. There's political scandal, there's intrigue, and really fun characters. But you called it, I was surprised when I went to your website and I saw you describe it as a space opera. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't know how opera is used in terms of science fiction. To me, it's more like what Jim said, it's a Western. It's a good guys, bad guys, very clear. There's some twists and turns, and there's some bad guys that we didn't expect to be bad guys. Opera? Why that term?
What I read of it, it reminded me a lot of the Disney program on Disney Plus, Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is kind of Star Wars the way George Lucas originally did it in the 70s,
right?
And 80s.
you know, for a TV show, and my son calls me and he goes, hey, have you watched Mandalorian? I said, no. He says, watch Mandalorian. He says, it's a space Western. So I turned it on. First episode, first scene, there's a gunfight in a bar. Mm-hmm. That doesn't get more Western than that.
Yeah. And that's really, I mean, when you think of the original Star Wars, it was space opera, space Western. Space opera, you know, this is my first run at the space opera venue. So I don't know if I'm the best person in the world to try to define it, but it's basically you've got interplanetary action going on. You've got the political intrigue going on. You've got the lone wolf type hero who is going about his business and meets the princess. And in this case, it's the actual princess for mine. So you've got all that. You've got the space battles, and there are two space battles in Galen's Way. So it's all these different elements that makes it a space opera, but you know, space Western kind of fits into that space opera.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. The you know, when I was going through, Galen is this, you know, incredible, like you just said, he's a lone wolf. He's mercenary, you know, and he's incredibly gifted with prowess, and you want him on your side. You do not want to go up against him. And yet he found that he needed to go find his old counselor. And he kind of needed, I don't know that that's necessarily like a Yoda character, but you know, he needed, wasn't so much that, and I will never be able to pronounce that character's name. I have it written in front of me, but you'll have to tell us how to pronounce the name. But he was a very neat character too, and a great, not exactly a sidekick, I guess, but they were a really great team with Cassandra. So tell us a little bit about his friend, and also tell us a little bit about Cassandra.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you picked up on Cassandra, because I really spent a lot of time developing her and how she came about.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, how she came about to be a part of the story. I'm probably going to have to go back to the beginning here. The whole Sarquest premise is that a few thousand years into our future, ours being here on Earth, there will be a dark force that invades the Milky Way galaxy. And another race of alien beings will come in and gather up everybody they can out of the Milky Way and get them to the Andromeda galaxy away from this thing. Because as it's going through the Milky Way, it is turning off the stars. It's sucking all the energy out of them. So when we get to StarQuest, it's been millions of years since that event. And in the prologue for Galen's Way, I kind of allude to that. And I did that on purpose because with this being the first book, I want people to have that introduction to what's going on. Why are we in the Andromeda Galaxy? And why do we care? And if you'll notice, the hero at the end of the prologue who stands the line at the end to give everybody time to get out is also named Galen. And that relationship between the two Galens will carry on as the series goes on too. But we get to Andromeda. It's been millions of years. It's to the point where the human race is now calling themselves the hominids. They have no clue there's anybody else out there in the Andromeda galaxy, kind of like we are now. Nobody in the Andromeda galaxy realizes there's this new species that's running around in this little corner of the galaxy. And so we get to the fourth age, and I picked that age because we're just before the human race gets discovered. And so you'll know why I'm done with the fourth age series when I get to that point when they get discovered, because there's nothing after that. That's the next age, and that's going to be somebody else who picks that up and runs with it. John's stories are going to be in what's called the 12th age, and we're talking millions of years between the fourth and the 12th. So we've got all this laid out so that the human race's journey through to get to the 12th age is going to be a lot of highs, a lot of lows. You know, it's not always going to be good, but, you know, we'll get through. So we get to the fourth age where we've got Galen, you know, in a bar, minding his own business. And you know, he's approached by a man who wants to hire him to go rescue the kidnapped princess. And this will get him into all sorts of trouble. And he has to go to meet with, it's Lear Fiatra. I can't even pronounce it. I wrote the name. So Lear is the man who's the mentor. He's more the Obi-Wan Kenobi type mentor, if you want to go with the Star Wars.
Obi-Wan, yeah.
So Cassandra is the AI for the ship that Galen has. And I wrote her because he needed to have a sidekick. Somebody keep him grounded. And I didn't want to, it couldn't obviously be another human being because he's a loner. So it can't be that. And I didn't want to just do a droid because that's really a Star Wars ripoff. So with Cassandra, I wanted her to have a very human appearance, even though she's just circuits. And I think when we get in back from the break, we'll kind of go into why I went the way with her that I did.
Okay. Well, you are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And right now, we'll be right back after a real brief word from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Find the link that says be a host and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. We are back in the studio. It is now 6:17. And we are on the air with Mr. Richard Polinelli talking about his new book, Galen's Way, that is due for publication in, I guess, a month or two. And if you want to call and talk to Richard, I don't see why you would want to, but if you want to call and talk to Richard, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And again, write that number down. It's 323-203-0815. And Richard, okay, continue.
So with Cassandra, when I put her character together, knowing that I wanted her to be more of a sidekick than just a bland computer program, I wanted her to be kind of a sassy, smart mouth, somebody who could really bust his chops when he needed him to be busted and get away with it. So kind of developing her was really a lot of fun as the story went on. There's kind of a running joke that I did not plot out. It just kind of organically grew where, you know, Galen starts telling her to shut up when she gets a little too mouthy. And then all of a sudden Galen and Ray are telling her to shut up when she's getting too mouthy. And then you get to where Lear is on the ship with the other two, and all three of them are telling her to shut up when she gets too mouthy. So I want her to be this kind of sassy, smart mouth. And her character arc is really going to grow and change a lot when we get into the second book. So I told John's wife what I had in mind, and her first reaction was, "Oh," and then she goes, "But that could be good." So we'll see. We'll see if I can pull it off. And it's going to be really different how her character goes, based, you know, if you just based it on this book. But I'm looking forward to developing these characters as we go forward, because there's a lot coming that they're going to be able to handle, and there's going to be some stuff that they're not going to be able to handle too well. So it should be a pretty good ride.
Excellent. Excellent. So what you're saying is Cassandra is picking up the human traits of being smart-assed and might kind of like, you know, my Aunt Sheila.
Yeah, you know, I hate to admit this, but there's a little bit more of me and Cassandra than probably should be. But, you know, there's... She's fun because I wanted her to become human to the reader without them thinking she was a real human being. So, you know, there's a couple of scenes I cut out because, you know, we wanted to make this a PG-13 because she's kind of a voyeur. And I thought I was getting a little too far across the line on a couple of it. But, you know, you get the feeling that she really cares for Galen.
Yeah.
And even though she's kind of picking on him here and there with some of the remarks and comments, I think she means well And I'm looking forward to developing their relationship, even though mm-hmm. we still have Rhea and Galen with their relationship too.
Well, and she's really integral to the action. Not only does she have this really spunky, wisecracking personality that does kind of see all, because that's what her job is, but he really relies on her to protect them, and she's able to anticipate what Galen's going to ask for, and she maneuvers them through all kind, you know, he just sort of lets her, he's not totally automatic pilot, but they make a really interesting technical team as well. Mm-hmm. And when she's in that mode, she, some of that sort of that fun part of her, she's like all business. And so I found her just a really integrated character. And he would not, he has to have her. And she's with the ship, his ship, the Tempest. And yet sometimes when he's not with the ship, she's still, I guess they're communicating some way, which I don't remember how they do that.
Well, he has,
is it a watch
has,
on his arm or, you know?
No, it's a little earbud. It's what we would call earbuds. It just doesn't have the wire sticking out. But he's got that so that she can warn him. You know, for example, in the first chapter, after he has met with the representative from Salacia and taken the job to go and rescue the princess, she warns him that, hey, you know, you're being followed. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's this young guy and a woman picked him up coming out of the bar. And she goes, oh, that's good. But I'm talking about the two that are coming from the other direction. And he's like, oh, well, crap, I didn't know about those two. So, yeah, she's able to help him out. And he relies on that a lot. And I wanted that to be that way. So it builds their friendship, which, you know, like I said, coming in the next few books, that's really going to grow as we keep going. It was really a conscious effort on my part to develop her as much as I could and still, you know, still get the Galen story and the rescue of the princess and the hot mess he finds himself in after he goes to that planet. You know, he just thinks, okay, I'll rescue her, take her home, job's done. Not quite. No, it got messy. So he's dealing with that. The thing with Galen too that I wanted to focus on was, yeah, he's the guy you don't want to meet in a dark alley. Mm-hmm. The old Star Wars thing is, who shot first, Han or Greedo? Well, in my book, it was Galen. I mean, he picked the fight, he shot the guy. There's no doubt about it. So he's not the perfect knight in shining armor, but he does have a very strong code of honor that he adheres to, and that was kind of born within him because of his ancestry, even though he doesn't know that. But his mentor Lear kind of shapes that when he gets a hold of him when he's a young child. And I spent a little time developing that aspect of how he was an orphan that they found, mysterious origins. They don't really know where he came from. And that ties in with some of the stuff we're going to be doing going forward too, because Galen's going to be a little bit more than what he appears to be by the time we get to the end of his story arc. But I wanted him to have that core of honor and decency, even though he's a smuggler and a pirate, and it, you know, will do just about anything he has to do to get the job done. And I thought by setting up why he would go to that planet, to avenge a business associate who was ambushed when it should have been Galen there. That kind of his code of honor would dictate, I've got to make that right. And he does in two different ways. Mm-hmm. When he gets his big payday, he shifts a tenth of it to the widow and the child of the man who got killed in his place. And then he goes and hunts down the guy who set him up and he takes care of him. Mm-hmm.
I have a question I have for you, Richard. It's not about Galen. Well, in a way it is. We talked to a lot of writers, and, you know, for 6 years now, we've talked to a lot of writers, and I'm a writer, you're a writer. The only one that isn't is Bobby. We're going to force her into writing a book. But Is there ever a time when you've developed a character that you absolutely fall in love with? You virtually fall in love with them. And it's just, it's like, boy, I got to give them another story or her another story. And I've got to do this. And you can't stop thinking about them. It's almost like your brain makes them real.
You know, funny you should ask me that question regarding with us talking the book, where Cassandra is really that character. You know, most of the characters I create, I have a connection to because I created them. And I, especially the main characters and some of the primary supporting characters, as I'm developing and giving them these things that are happening to make them better or to, you know, get them through a trial, whatever the case may be. So I really am attached to all of them. But with Cassandra, yeah, as I was writing this book, I tried not to make her the center of the book. And that was a fight in a way, because I really have the plans I have for her in the second and third book. I think people are going to figure out that she's kind of my favorite character in all this, even though Galen and Rhea and all the others play the bigger parts. But by the time we get to the third book, I think, you know, Cassandra might be taking more of a lead role. So yeah, with Cassandra, I think that's probably the one.
Okay. Mine was, what's her name in Stillwaters?
Yeah.
The woman that got killed.
what's her name in Stillwaters?
I don't remember her name.
I'll never forget
what's her name. You know, I've heard so many characters over the years that it's really hard to remember one.
Okay, now you're reminding me of the second bar scene in Galen's Way, which you wouldn't know about, Jim. But the name of the bar that Galen goes into later on, the Bitter Hag, nobody knows, and the owner won't admit to it, but they think it was named after his seventh wife.
Yeah. Got it. So, you know. God.
I have a question. Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Jim, did you still have something you wanted to say right then?
No.
Okay. So part of science fiction, of course, is you're creating new names, not only for characters, but planets, cities, you know, places. Because this is part of StarQuest, were there some of the places that you write about, did they already exist in StarQuest and you were referencing them? Or did you create, you know, the names of these different planets? And even some of the contraptions, you have a torture device that is absolutely scary as all heck. And I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but I wondered if it also had an appearance in a larger StarQuest, you know, that you're working with. What elements of that were you working with that came into your book?
Because I'm in the fourth age, I had a lot of leeway with names and planet names. There's one planet that's named in fourth age that will be there in the 12th age that I know John's going to mention. Which is kind of the nice thing is with that freedom, I'm less likely to mess something up for John later down the line. For the other planets and some of the names of the people, in some cases I came up with them. In some cases I went to what's called a fantasy name generator, and you put in different criteria and you punch it and it'll give you like 10 options. And I would look through and I like that name, jot it down, keep going. That one sounds good. And I would piece them together. So, it gives that alien, not of our time and space feel to it. Galen, you know, Galen Dwen I came up with, and Galen Underwood, because I wanted that kind of some connection to what our names would be. But with some of the others, you know, I just kind of grabbed names from that.
Okay.
Started mixing and matching.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
thank you. That's a great, science fiction name generator. Okay. All the authors out there listening, what a great place to go to get a name.
It's like my comment in the back of one of the books that we did about I oftentimes think science fiction is just another way for you all to sit around and make up funny, weird names.
Yes. Yep.
That nobody can pronounce. Okay.
Yeah, John's got some good ones in 12th Age. I'm like, okay. I'm not touching those.
You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after this brief word for Out West.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Okay, we are back. It is now 6:31, and we're talking to Mr. Richard Paulinelli out there in Fruta, Colorado. I still can't believe you live in a place called Fruta. But
you know,
hey,
it's a nice little town. It's nice and quiet. We don't have gunfire in the evening and traffic jams.
I have cows for neighbors, so I couldn't tell you.
We have two traffic lights in the entire town.
You know what? I think we do too. No, only one. We only have one.
Yeah, but you have Boise in the, you know.
Well, 15 miles down the road. Okay. You know what? Let's talk a little bit about if you don't mind, Tuscany Bay's Planetary Anthology. Mm-hmm. You explain it a lot better than I do. All I know is that we did, six originals. And then we picked up the rest of them that had already been published and just reprinted with permission. Let's speak a little bit about, Tuscany Bay's anthology. And then if you wouldn't mind, the award that the, writer out of, Mars is up for.
Okay. The last book of the series is actually coming out this Tuesday. It's Planetary Saturn. And I want to give a shout out to Bokera Brumley, because she handed in a finished manuscript for that book that was damn near perfect. I think I clicked my mouse 7 times going through that manuscript, and that was just to add blank pages so that the next story would start on an odd page, and one or two space issues. Amazing job she did, not only getting the stories that she picked and putting them together, but to deliver that final manuscript in that condition. You know, all hail Bokera out there in Texas. She did a great job, made my job easier, made your job easier.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so that book is coming out on Tuesday. But the Planetary series actually started as an idea, I want to say back in 2017, there was a group of us who were throwing it back and forth. And the concept was to take a series of anthologies. Each book would be based on one of the planets. So it was originally supposed to be 9. And then somebody said, well, if we're going to do that, let's throw in the moon and the sun. And we all said, yes, you know, what could possibly go wrong? Anyway, so we did that. Superversive Press started with the first 5, which was Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and Jupiter. And the Superversive had to shut down. The publisher, Jason Rennie, was kind enough to say if any publisher out there wanted to pick up the series, reprint the first 5, and finish the series off, he would give them everything, all rights, expect no payment. And then I came to you and I talked to you about it. And we decided we would go ahead and pick that up. So because of Amazon and some of its entanglements, we couldn't just re-release the first 5. So no. we actually went with the first book that was ready, which was Pluto, which I had edited. Right. Then Luna followed. And then I think we went with Uranus. And then at that point, we could re-release the original 5. And then we finished it off with Sol, Neptune, and then Saturn comes out on Tuesday. And
Saturn, right.
It's the total for the 11 books is 190 short stories by 93 authors. No, right. 194 short stories, 90 authors. And, you know, there's not a bad story in the bunch. It was an incredible effort. It did take from what, December 2019 to February 2021 to get the entire 11 book series out.
Right.
So it has taken a long time to get here. But to all the authors, whoever among them are listening, you guys were amazing. The editors, great job. I'm very proud of it. I mean, Jim and I and Bobby are on video, so you can see over my shoulder the whole set sitting there on my bookshelf. And I look at that and I'm like, I don't know how we did it, but I'm glad we did. It did pick up an award. The Mars did, which was one of the reprints, but Mars was the only reprint that we did where we added two stories.
Right.
And that was because the author who wound up winning the award, it was for his short story in Mars. It was the 3 Billion Year Love. James is a great writer. James Piles is the one who won the award. He's a great writer. He submitted it. And it was, you know, got to have that one in. And there's the second new story is Far Away the Pale Blue Dot. And they were both great additions. Mars, actually, among the five reprints, is the one that sold the best when we re-released it. And I credit James's story because it was a great concept and he pulled it off. We've got him in, I think, one or two other books in the series. I think Saul and Saturn. But don't hold me to that. There's 90 authors. It's hard to keep them straight.
Yeah, but, it's pretty tough.
Yeah. I was happy that it won that award. I wish we could give an award to the entire series because it really is
it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, the stories that I read, and I didn't read them all, obviously. But I did a couple as I was going through and proofreading and some of the stories are just great. They're just really, really, really good. And I'm not a big sci-fi guy. So for me to say that is
we're converting large. You slowly, but surely we're converting you.
I don't think you're ever going to convert me.
Dana,
but I have to say that your kudos to Bokhara. I find that amusing because in our book, Last Lonely Trail, she's a prostitute.
Yeah. Okay, now I've got to tell that story. Okay, when we went to do Last Lonely Trail, I realized I had a whole bunch of people I was going to have to name. And I figured, okay, we've got this thing called red shirting in sci-fi, where you call out to your author friends. You go, okay, I'm going to kill off some people. Do you want to volunteer to be one of the victims? And I have done this in other books. In fact, I died a glorious death the other day, and I can't remember the name of the book because it's like the seventh or eighth time I've died in a book. So, so I put out the call, and I was just looking for the gang members that we were going to kill off throughout the book. You know, the guys that Hall and Armstrong are chasing. Well, all my female author friends are like, well, you know, we want in on this. I'm like, well, there wasn't a band of female bandits running around the country shooting people, but I'll try to fit you in. And she drew the assignment of being in league with the bad guys somewhat. It was funny because her son read the book and he was mad. She was like, great. She's like, I love this. This is what I asked to do this. And he's like, how could they do that to you? So, you know, he's sticking up for mom, but it was fun to write that and to get some of some of my friends into it. And to let them be a part of that. But that was where that came from. But
that was a very fun book to write. Actually, I loved writing that book. It was work. It truly was. Because it's when anytime you write with another writer, you're in conjunction with or written by two writers, the deal is you have to make sure the flow never stops. Mm-hmm. And so it's matching your writing to your partner's writing so the flow doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And I think we did a great job in that. I think because you can't tell who wrote what.
That's true.
And we had some epic deaths in that book. I mean, epic.
What was the one review? Inventive death scenarios. That was the
one. Yes.
Which I kind of carried over in Galen's way. I've got some interesting deaths for people. So.
Well, I mean, you know, when you have a creaky old sign fall off and cut the guy's head off and he's galloping with his hands handcuffed behind him.
And that was one of my author friends that I knocked off that way. I sent him that scene. I said, this is what we do to you. And he's like, oh, cool. I'm like, okay. Long as he's happy.
Yeah. So we got, you know, we did a good job on that. But Planetary Anthology is out now, except for the last book, Saturn, which is next month. Yeah.
No, it comes up Tuesday. Yeah.
Tuesday. And other than that, we have other projects in the works, and we've been busy. You know, it's never, you can't stop. You know, you got to fight with Amazon every time you want to do something. It's just like, it's part of the deal. But right now, we're going to be right back with you. This is LA Talk Radio. You were listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after this brief word from Creating Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina from The Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or inspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started, or you can go to www.creative-edge.com. Dot services. Creative Edge Publicity. It's your brand. It's your future.
And we are back. It is now 6:40. And we're talking to Richard Polinelli and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And we've been talking about a little bit about Tuscany Bay Books and about his new book, Galen's Way. And I know you got other projects in the works, Richard. And I'm not even going to ask you tonight about Writer's Block, because we've gone over that so many times before.
I don't have time for it.
I know. So what besides more of the what is it called? The Galaxy Quest, or
This is Star Quest.
Star Quest. What do you got in the pipeline?
Well, there's actually three series within this Star Quest thing that I'm doing. One is in the Fourth Age when we're in Andromeda, but there's two other ideas that I had that tie in with the original idea I have for Galen's Way, and they happen pre-migration, so they're going to be in the Milky Way galaxy. It's going to be the Rangers and the Hunters. So I'm figuring from 2022 on, that's all I'm going to be doing, which gives me this year to finish five projects. The next one up is going to be on the first fiction credit I ever had was back in 1986 with Elite Comics, and I was the lead writer for Sea Dragon. And I was talking with the surviving partner of Elite Comics, and I got the green light to do a novelization of Sea Dragon and get into some of the backstory that we just didn't have time to do with the six issues that came out. So that one's the one I'm working on now. The next one is going to be called Firstborn's Curse, and that is kind of going to be a historical fiction based on the biblical Cain. It's going to be his story, and it's going to be told a little bit differently than what you think his life played out. After that, it gets real interesting, because I'm going back to the Del Rio series and writing the fourth book. That one's going to be Shades. And then I've got some authors who are putting together short stories in the Escaping Infinity universe. And we're going to do an anthology of that. And then that's going to be followed by the long-awaited sequel to Escaping Infinity, which is Expanding Infinity. And we'll find out what happens to Pete and Liz and the gang after we left them last in Escaping Infinity. So I've got to get all that done this year so I can start working on the three StarQuest series next year. Nothing to it.
Hey, wow. you got nothing going on. Why don't you write another book or two?
Well, see, I took it to, when you think about it, it's been 2.5 years since I released my last book, which was When the Gods Fell. And it's not like I wasn't doing anything. I was writing short stories. I've got 8 short stories in the Planetary series. I've got short stories in Sherlock Holmes anthologies. So I was busy writing those and then busy getting the anthology series out. Once we got all that done, all of a sudden it's like, hey, I can start writing books again. So I guess I better get to it. So this I hope will be the first of many.
There you go. Okay, Bobby, you had something?
Well, I did, but do you, I'm looking at the time. Do you want me to ask my question when we come back from the next?
We're done with breaks.
Did we have another?
No.
Okay. So the year of 2020 with COVID and all that certainly doesn't appear to have impacted your, certainly your productivity. But again, thinking about new authors and authors that are out there that maybe have thought, you know, have had some challenges launching books during this very different kind of time. It seems like you've just revved up your productivity, although we've known you to always be a very productive writer. Do you have any kind of insight that you could share about how you maneuvered through this year, unprecedented year of last year?
You know, for me, 2020 was crazy because I actually was among the early group of people to catch it. We got exposed to it in Omaha. Oh. And as Jim knows, he saw the pictures of what happened after I recovered from COVID. The doctor thinks the COVID triggered a shingles outbreak, which hit me right in the face. Right. So there was about a month or two there where I was not doing anything. But the best thing I can say is you're going to have issues coming up in life. It's just the way life is. You know, we for first part of the year, we're dealing with COVID. Middle of the year, we wound up unexpectedly moving from Nebraska over here to Colorado. You know, that was not a small matter to deal with. You just have to find the time, even when it's crazy, to just set aside a little bit of time. You don't have to write your book. You can kind of map out what you want to do when you can sit down and get into a rhythm. The best thing I found lately is I actually have a pretty set schedule. And obviously something will come up and I have to, you know, set it aside, but I stick to the schedule as much as I can. You know, put in about 3 hours of writing in the morning, take an hour and a half break, come back, maybe do another couple hours, and not just writing, marketing too. If you've got a book out already, you know, give some love to that and get out there and do, you know, social media post or look and see if there's some way you can get some advertising for it or go on a radio show or be a guest interview. On my blog, I have something called Superversive Creators, and we do the Superversive Sunday Spotlight, and it's a quick interview form. I send it out to the author. They fill it out, as much info as they want. Send me some links, send me some book covers. I put it up on the blog. I've got the next Sunday spotlights all the way through the end of March already uploaded, ready to go, run on every Sunday. So, you know, find bloggers who are doing book reviews, whatever. That's also a big part of your writing. It's not just writing the book.
Right.
You know, if you want people to read it, you got to let them know it's out there. So I do that for maybe a couple hours in the afternoon, and then, you know, I walk away and kind of unplug and recharge the batteries. You can't just pound away and pound away. I used to, but the days where I would sit down and write for like 14 hours at a go, those are way back in the past. That's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
So pace yourself, be regular. If you get knocked off your schedule for a day or two because life happens, you know, let it happen, deal with it, and then come back and pick it up and go. And just keep writing. I mean, even if you trash everything you wrote, write. It's the best way not to get to the point where, well, I don't feel like writing. I don't want to write. Well, 2 weeks later, you're still doing that. You're not writing. So just, you know, don't find that balance and don't let things get to you to the point where you just want to quit. That's the worst thing any writer can do.
Right. And if you're a new writer and you're looking for a publisher, try a little press, like ebooks. You can find us on the web at blackdogpublishing.co or tuscanybaybooks.com. And we'll do you right, and you'll get a nice product. And you can go hardbound, you can go softbound, or you can go digital, or all three. So, Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having
me. It's always a pleasure having you around. Yeah, sure.
Well, thanks for having me on. You know, it was nice. Back in August, I was in your chair, and Bobby and I were.
That's right.
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder how I let you talk me, how you let me talk you into running that mic hammer opening the last time you and I.
All right. Go have a rum and coke. Relax.
I'm halfway there.
Thanks. Oh, there you go. Thanks for joining us. Bobby, you had something you wanted to say about Out West.
Oh, I just want to say that we have, just for a few more days, we have our Bacon with Love cookie contest going on. This is also sponsored by an author we've had on the show a couple of times, Nancy Quinn, and it's really fun. You just go to Out West Shop. And then where it says blog in the toolbar, just drop down and you'll find stuff about books, and you'll find about the baking contest and just a whole bunch of different articles. So just remember outwestshop.com.
There you go. And for Ronan Rosner, who, of course, got his little kudos tonight with the bookie, Sam Hassan, who owns LA Talk Radio, and, of course, Miss Bobby Jean Bell, myself, Jim Christina, and our errant, absent co-host, Mr. Russ Avison, and, of course, Richard Polinelli, who was sitting there staring at me. we are out of here.